Does anybody else want to speak to that? Sure.
In my cosmology, can people hear me all right? In my cosmology, in my people's cosmology, there is no such thing as evil. There is only balance. And evil is merely a projection of what is going on inside of oneself. And so if there's something amok in a society, so if I defecated, in other words, shat, had a good shit crap on this floor right now, it would stink up the entire room. And either you could beat me to a pulp and put my face in it like some people train dogs and try to domesticate a dog, or we would all come together and figure out why it was that I needed or I had to, because I'm feeling ill, shit, in the middle of this room, and it would stink the whole room, and so we all clean up the room and fix me up and make me better so that I wouldn't, with gentleness, shit again in the middle of my community space. So there is no evil where I come from. There is only human beings acting out towards one another because of some debased socialization. Men were not born to rape.
I agree, there's not evil. I agree with you.
Anybody else want to work with that in terms of addressing capitalism? No, we'll go on to the next. Okay. How would you respond to those who criticize the position as too utopian, the gifting society? And maybe the second half fits, and how can we put such a gift economy in practice here in the U.S., where corporate power is so enormous? So the part one is, how would you respond to those who criticize the utopian, unrealistic, as utopian or unrealistic?
Well, I can.
You want to
try? I don't want to monopolize this, though. Somebody. Okay. Okay. We have to realize that on the other extreme from utopian, there is this hellish situation that we're in now. So something may seem impossible, but on the other hand, this world would have seemed impossible even 10 years ago. The situation we're in is so grievous and grave. So we need something that's really alternative and not just a minimum adjustment or even a large adjustment to what we've got, because, girls, it isn't working at all. So we got to do something else. Now, it's not utopian. Also, because many societies already practice it. It's not utopian because mothers do it. It's not utopian because there's a feminist movement that believes in the values of care. Not everybody in that movement believes in those values, but lots of us do. It's not utopian because there's a peace movement. Because there's the movement for social justice. All of these are attempts to satisfy the need for a better world. We have to shift the paradigm, our way of thinking. It's not that I suggest that today I'm going to start giving you this and you're going to start giving that. We're going to do that right here and now. We're going to change our thinking and begin to validate the gift-giving we're already doing and devalue patriarchal capitalism that's leading us to the end of the world. Now, here's the second. No, I have the second. I had some more. I'm sorry. I have these suggestions of what we can do now. Had a whole list of them here. So if y'all, okay, recognize gift giving where it already exists, in the home, in acts of kindness and hospitality, in spirituality, in communication, in alternative communities, in activism, art, and reframe epistemology with gift giving. Recognize problem solving as need satisfaction and therefore gift giving. Restore the key of gifts and needs to academic disciplines where it has been removed because of the emasculation, that is the patriarchal formation of academics and academia. Connect individual charitable actions with systemic change towards a gift economy. Food banks, senior gleaners, tsunami relief, solidarity economics, accurate reporting. Frame philanthropy as gift-giving mothering, even if men are doing it. All men had mothers. Recognize honest political motivations as attempts to satisfy needs. Create projects that model and promote gift-giving. Yellow bikes, free cycling, free spaces for women especially. Give land back to indigenous people. Create and protect the commons. Use media, TV, and radio, literature, movies, art, music to change the consciousness towards gift-giving. Connect the women's movement with indigenous people's movements. Alternative economics, peace and environmental movements according to the common theme of gift-giving, the gift economy. Support matriarchal models, not a mirror image of patriarchy, and matriarchal studies. Promote female images of God's of female images of God and goddess spirituality. Honor Mother Earth. Develop a deep critique of the market and exchange, and so forth.
Thank you.
In fact, gifting does exist all over the industrial world. And there is a myth that we are told, which is that only traditional societies, only indigenous societies practice this. It's not at all true. It's that we don't have on a lens to see how much it happens here. And I'm not talking about, well, I'll get lunch today and then you can get the next one. I don't mean that. I don't mean the birthday present that I give you so you know you have to give me one. I mean profound, unrequited gifts of goods and service without any expectation of reciprocity. And I would encourage you all to just sit and make a list of all of the ways that you see them in your lives. It is true that the more commodified our society becomes and the more we step into market uberalis, the less that gifting and the social ties behind them are valorized, but they exist everywhere. And one thing that happened in Mali, and here I want to give deference, not deference, but respect to what Bernadette said, which point I completely appreciate, and I wish that I had not to change your point, but the second half of my talk that I had to zip through was about the process whereby they asked me to document Dhamma, and I said, only if you will help me document gifting that's going on in the U.S. So we had months and months and months of sitting and writing together, and you wouldn't believe the degree to which it happens here. But the system can't work as long as everyone knows that we can live outside of capitalism. So we're told that it doesn't. So anyway, I think it's very important to recognize that our humanity has not been taken away from us, and everywhere, beginning here as well, gifting is a big part of life.
People use terms like utopia, and I love utopia. I always had no shame about calling myself an idealist, even in the middle of horrendous struggle in my country against apartheid. Idealists and utopians are usually juxtaposed with what Americans like calling realists. And they base a lot of their thinking in political science, especially in something called games theory, which if the progenitor, the man who came up with game theory had his day, we would have no Earth because the U.S. would have nuked the hell out of the Soviet Union at the time. The other kind of game that they like playing with the students in the United States in particular, and they love to export this. My professor at Stanford University where I was, Stephen Krasner, is now Condoleezza Rice's chief advisor. So note this, and this is the man that was shoving Prisoner's Dilemma down my throat. I was in prison as a kid, like my sister Midler here, and they didn't mess with us. I mean, I was lucky to come out kind of alive with my body largely intact. But they suppose that people will sell each other out in a prison when you keep them apart. I did not betray any of my comrades or my struggle. So their assumption is fundamentally flawed. I want to talk about the meaning of what realism is and what is utopian. I would suggest that the real reality is that our species have evolved, and that if we continue consuming and generating carbon monoxide in the particular way we have, the passage is inexorable. Our species, like other species before ours, will become extinct. And that is what is real, not utopian. We have a choice. We have agency. We can act. We can change. We have consciousness. If we choose, and if we don't, that is what is real.
Okay. Are we ready? Do you want to any more, or should I ask another question? Do you have something you want to contribute? No? You're good? All right. This is, again, a kind of a logistical question. Are there any more books available on this topic? We have Forgiving by Jen Vaughn and The Gift by Athenor. Are there any other resources that you can speak to?
There are many books on the gift economy by various people. Lewis Hyde is one. Jacques Godbout is another. They don't talk about it in exactly the same way as a sort of re-evolutionary project connected with mothering as I do, but there are books over there. I have some in the room that I didn't get in time to get. There's a new book, Women and the Gift Economy, which has 35 different women represented, articles by 35 different women. There's a new children's book, and so forth. I think Forgiving, and then there is a book. There are books on matriarchy that will soon be out, and there are other books such as Barbara Mann's books on the Iroquois that are very enlightening or convincing about how the Iroquois did the gift economy and do. And functioning, but she will tell you later more about it. And there are many books on the gift economy. It just depends on how you use it. Oh!
Uh-huh.
Yes!
Okay.
I've got some in my room, and I'll go and bring them down afterwards, but I don't have them now.
Good. Well, those were two good answers. All right. Anybody else want to contribute to the book list since we're on that track? No? Okay. So, Bernadette, this is for you. And others can jump in if you like afterwards. How is scarcity dealt with in your culture? Scarcity. How is scarcity dealt with?
That is a profoundly beautiful question. And I was going to talk about it earlier because I was trained in Marxist economics as a child from birth because we were waging struggle. It was one kind of cleavage. You know, capitalism cleaves you from where you come from. Marxism cleaves you. And guess who or where both originate? In patriarchy. So when we talk about accumulation, you're accumulating what? Where does surplus come from, and where does scarcity come from? In its very origins, in our cultures, like I was talking about homeless people, there is no scarcity. When you have nothing, let me tear what I have off me. I am flesh and bone. And you tear off what you have, you are flesh and bone. There is no jewelry. There is nothing beyond the tissue that we each have, and which is the very, very same tissue. We can donate kidneys and hearts to one another. Scarcity, like the concept of accumulation, is a created construct by particular powers for particular reasons. That is what is scarcity. My people, we don't have scarcity. Even the homeless share what little they have, especially during ancient ceremonies. Can you imagine brutalized homeless people having ceremonies where they accumulate what they can from the fields, etc., in the middle of an urban area, and sharing that with everybody, even rich people who come along for the ride, tourists who want to find out what's going down, academics from the global north who want to write a footnote and a chapter. Everybody is welcome. There is no such thing as scarcity. It's in the mind.
Yeah, I would like to say something about scarcity. Our countries, third world countries, we have very rich natural resources. If there is scarcity, the U.S. corporations won't be there, the British or the Canadian corporations. So it's just an accumulation. It's just a new form of, a new kind of colonization, imperialism that is present. That's why people are in poverty. The IMF, World Bank, and all those institutions.
I'd like to also say that capitalism takes from the many and gives to the few, and so that way it's creating scarcity. It also creates scarcity by throwing away the wealth on things like armaments, which don't nurture anybody. And in a way, it's a parasitic on the gifts of everyone. When it creates scarcity, then it can stay in control. If people have enough, they don't need to work for the capitalist machine.
Okay. So I don't know if this is a rhetorical question. Bernadette, do you think that Western countries lost their Bantu because of the Industrial Revolution?
Sure. I think it should be posed to a northern person, so I will respond because I like having a say about everything, maybe because we were silent for so long under apartheid. And at some parties, we have to be silent and well-behaved as well, which I don't do very well. So, no, I think it came well before the Industrial Revolution, didn't it? You're an economist by trade, yeah. But I think far more than that, than losing materiality, far more than what people can do with the flesh, is what they do with your soul. I'm not the soul up there, out there in the ether. I mean your very essence, your being inside. When they destroy that, I think living, coming to the United States, I mean, Canada's different for me. I go to Canada, I don't feel so raped. I feel raped here. I walk down the passage, I walk down the streets, I come to the airport, I feel physically raped in this country. And that's something to be said for the country. If it rapes my, you know, if I feel raped, there's something brutal about it, the energy, about the people. The first question somebody asks you is this your first time in the United States? That's the first question that comes to mind when somebody sees somebody in a gifted dress like this. So that would be what would concern me. I'm going to turn over the question about where exactly you lost your Ubuntu.
All right, she was asked, you know, Bernadette was asked to define the word.
Oh, my apologies. It's like Dhamma. Dhamma in Mali, it is Umtu in Shona, which is in northern, which is Mugabe's language in Zimbabwe. And it's not, we call it Ubuntu, and it's a Nguni term, which is Xhosa Zulu. And but they're using it to describe the movement across Africa, and what it means is something different. It means that my identity is tied to everybody's, that I am, my existence is because I belong. It's not I am black because I'm not white. I'm a woman because I'm not a man. It's not a negative construct. It's a positive construct. And it's a construct rooted in belonging. Fundamentally, it's a very different thing to accumulation, to individualism. Everything that European thinking that we all trained in is centered on. And so that's why we're asking people to shift, not us, the people who've always practiced Ubuntu, but we're asking y'all, or whomever's located in the global north, to shift so you can come with us, or we will leave you behind. And we are busy leaving you behind if you're not coming with.
U-B-U-N-T-U. There's a song by the South African band Johnny Clegg and Juluka, and there's a line in it. It says, oh no. We are the prisoners of the prisoners we have taken. So I'm not a great historian, but my belief is that we lost it when the slave trade happened, which was not that long before the conquest of all of the lands happened in the West. So people talk about globalization as something that happened maybe this century. The first act of globalization, at least that I know of, was the theft of millions and millions of African people brought here to be slaves of the white colonialists who also were, of course, enslaving indigenous peoples and lands. That's my understanding of where it started, and it's all gone on from there. Okay. You're right. You're right. So I have the wrong order. The lands were taken, the native lives were taken. In some cases, as in Haiti, every single solitary native person was killed by the slavers, and then having exhausted that population, then they brought slaves from Africa. I think words are good, but I think we need to go a bit beyond that because we are all living, if you just look around you in this room, we are all living heartily and fully off of the fruits of that stolen land and those stolen lives. And that's what we need, not just reparations back to South Africa and all of the other places where people have been raped, pillared, and plundered, but then are taking responsibility in our daily lives to try and right that wrong.
I still think it has to do with the rise of the market and the logic of exchange, which separates people, and patriarchy, which makes us dominate. And I think it has to do with that. So that's how we divide. We become
dominated.
Adversaries to each other.
You know what would move me deeply? And what has moved me deeply as I've done my healing, and I like Miller, I was in prison as a child, and many, I've seen people die in different parts. I go to meetings where people from the Philippines are being murdered in the Philippines while we're at the meeting defending human rights. So this is my life has never been a tea party, and I don't intend it to become a tea party except the occasional margarita. Now, what moves me? Well, as I'm healing, I'm like a rape survivor who will never see her rapist or continuously is confronted with a rapist at every meeting, at every moment. There's the rapist. I go to the bathroom. There's the rapist. I go there. There's the rapist. Imagine that. What moves me is if people take agency for themselves and responsibility. I am wicked. I upset my friend. Or I structurally, my people have upset my friend's people. I will go and claim responsibility, even in a deep consciousness way. Because no matter how many times I say it or write it, if I embody that, I can work towards healing the planet, towards healing the cosmos, towards having a friend who doesn't look like me, and who doesn't come from where I come from. And that would move me, is if people, and women in particular from the global north, did more of that with people like us who are from the global south. And so we feel less raped when we come, and we want to share our love with you, because by Jove, we are filled with love. And you take the love, but it's not in a gifting way, because all people are taught here is rape. And I feel constantly, routinely, re-raped. So come and share in the abundance of love that is freely available, that is a cosmic gift to all of us.
Okay. Any more? I don't have any more written questions, any more dialogue or any other things, any comments before we pull this one to a close. Yes, please.
I don't need the mic.
I'm glad they're not playing Cole Porter next door. This is much more appropriate.
I don't need to respond to your comment verbally. This is my response to you.
This is a nonverbal hug just for the recording. Is there any other dialogue or anything? Yes. Matriarchy, what is the question is, what is the rest of the afternoon going to cover?
It's matriarchy, spirituality, and the Iroquois gift economy.
Okay. Shall we continue into the afternoon session, or do people want a 2 or 3 minute bathroom break? Huh? 2 or 3 minute bathroom break, 5 minutes? Okay. So it's almost 4 o'clock. Let's convene right at 4:05.